Are you ready to unlock the secret to youthful vitality? Meet MitoPure, the revolutionary Urolithin A supplement from Timeline Nutrition. MitoPure ignites your body's natural anti-aging pathway, mitophagy. As we age, our cells can become damaged and dysfunctional. But with MitoPure, you can recycle these worn-out cells. MitoPure is a clinically validated solution backed by over 15 years of robust scientific research. Boost your cellular energy, enhance muscle strength and endurance, and even fight skin aging, all without changing your diet or exercise routine. I discovered MitoPure a couple of years ago after diving into the science of Urolithin A. Since then, it's become a vital part of my wellness routine. For more information and to order, visit timeline.com/Hoffman. Use code Hoffman at checkout to receive 10% off MitoPure. Whether you're looking to support muscle health, enhance your skin routine, or invest in your long-term vitality, MitoPure is your scientifically backed ally in the quest for slowing down the aging process. That's timeline.com/Hoffman for MitoPure. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly opportunity to share important information with you via your questions. Questions come to questions@drhoffman.net. We haven't been giving out that much during part one. I kind of forgot how to do this. I took 1 week off and I forgot how to do the podcast.
Email your questions to questions@drhoffman.net.
Okay. But we do have a lot of questions in the mailbag this week.
We do.
So, what's our next question?
This comes from Jackie. Hello, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I'm a reasonably healthy 74-year-old woman not taking any medications, but I have an inhaler to use as needed because of a mild case of bronchiectasis. I've never taken a flu vaccine or any other vaccine. I've only had a few mild colds or sinus problems in the past several years. My pulmonologist would like me to take an pneumonia vaccine and also the RSV. Could you tell me the pros and cons of the pneumonia vaccine in my situation? I'm confused as to which pneumonia vaccine I would choose. And also, how efficacious is the RSV vaccine?
Okay. Interesting questions. So what is bronchiectasis? Bronchiectasis is the result of usually some form of chronic lung inflammation, usually infectious. You know, if you've had a lot of bronchitis, or if you've been a smoker, or if you've lived in an urban environment, your lungs may become inflamed. And the result is that you have like little Swiss cheese holes in your lungs. And these areas become vulnerable to infection. Some mucus may accumulate in these Swiss cheese holes, and it provides a perfect culture medium for bacteria. And pneumonia is it can be a viral pneumonia, but it can also, many forms of pneumonia are bacterial. Individuals with bronchiectasis have weak lungs, and they have poor localized immunity in their lungs, and they're more susceptible to bronchitis and pneumonia. And in fact, some people who have bronchiectasis require continuous antibiotic or pulsed antibiotic treatment. In other words, periodically they just gain antibiotics, or continuously they get low levels of an antibiotic to prevent an infection as a prophylaxis against infection. So I think it's reasonable to take the Pneumovax. The more general question is, should all adults over the age of, I guess it's 65 or 60, I don't even know what the current recommendation is, but yeah, there's a checklist of things that you should do when you're past a certain age. And among them are take the RSV vaccine and take the pneumonia vaccine, because, you know, older individuals have reduced immunity, poor lung function, and they're more prone to pneumonia. And you know the old saying, pneumonia is the old man's friend. In other words, when you are, you know, experiencing the ravages of aging, pneumonia could come along and dispatch you. I mean, that's not felicitous expression, the old man's friend.
It's a grim reaper.
The grim reaper, right. Something that will release you from your mortal coils, so to speak. Okay, so I think in this instance, it's reasonable to take those vaccines. I don't think those vaccines are associated with major adverse side effects. You know, vaccines have gotten a bad name after the COVID misadventure, where unfortunately, two things. One, the vaccine wasn't as effective as it was billed. And secondly, there were more side effects than was admitted.
Sure.
So that I think public health officials lost people's confidence, and now there's a lot of vaccine resistance. And I think we have to pick and choose our vaccines, and not necessarily vaccinate willy-nilly against every possible pathogen in the world, because maybe there's some potential for, the load of all these vaccines to have an adverse effect on our health. But on the other hand, to pick and choose the circumstances where we take vaccines, is the RSV vaccine very effective? I haven't looked at the effectiveness of it. The problem with some of these vaccines is the very people who need them the most, they're the least effective in. Older people have a poor response to vaccines. They don't take. So there's actually a lot of evidence that proper nutrition, I mean, things like before mentioned, we talked about vitamin D in part one, getting adequate, levels of physical exercise, sleep, good Russ. Nutrition, healthy microbiome, that actually enables vaccines to be more effective. So I think the question is not so much, should you take the vaccine? It's like, how can you optimize the effectiveness of the vaccine? Because it might confer some protection against some of the infections you would be vulnerable towards.
And the care and nourishment of our terrain ultimately has everything to do with any of the consequences of any of these, whether it's the illness or the vaccine itself.
So it's an all of the above approach. It's not like, should I take natural or should I take the vaccine? I think, really take a complementary approach. Take Empower, for example, which actually is OHCC, among the things that you can take to boost immunity. Take various, that's a mushroom extract, take other mushroom extracts, cordyceps and so on, as a bulwark against immunosenescence, which is the natural age-related decline in your immunity.
Yes. All right. Jackie, thank you very much for your thoughtful question. We wish you well.
You want to tee up the commercial or shall I?
Oh, you'll tee up the commercial.
All right, fine. Okay, so folks, once again, let's take a moment to hear from one of our sponsors. Remember, they are what make intelligent medicine a continuing free resource to you. So listen up. You're listening to Intelligent Medicine, a resource to help you take control of your health. We offer a balanced, objective analysis of all your health, wellness, and aging options, both conventional and alternative. Now you can take your engagement to the next level by joining Fullscript. Fullscript is my online dispensing platform that only offers curated, professional-grade supplement brands that I know and trust. Never counterfeit or expired, always stored and shipped correctly. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com for more information and to start your free Fullscript account. Buying through Fullscript offers fast shipping, optional refill reminders, a mobile-friendly site, it's safe, secure, and HIPAA compliant and offers world-class support. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com. You'll get access to the supplements and features you need to help you achieve your wellness goals, including my custom targeted protocols that combine the products I recommend to address specific needs, heart health, immune support, and much more. It's all at DearHoffmanStore.com. DearHoffmanStore.com. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting our sponsors. Our sponsors are carefully vetted by yours truly because we only want to share messages that are the most credible and that really offer you a legitimate pathway to health optimization. So that's why we feature the sponsors that we do in order to also obtain some underwriting for our free podcasts. Okay. What's the next question?
Need sponsors. Okay. This comes from Ken. Ken says, a friend of mine has hypersomnia and persistent low sodium causing walking disturbances, confusion, and whole body tiredness, your thoughts. Huh.
You know,
that's a lot there.
This is a time where, you know, in the future, doctors are going to diagnose conditions, or at least they're going to come up with a menu of options via AI. They're going to plug in hypersomnia, which is the definition of that is that you want to sleep all the time, and mm-hmm. hyponatremia, which is low sodium, and, mm-hmm. you know, put it into an AI model, as I'm about to. And so now these days, when you do a search, because I just put hypersomnia and hyponatremia, and I didn't use like a medical diagnostic AI program. But mm-hmm. these days, when you just Google something, they are using AI. So
anytime I do that, AI is showing me answers. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I actually don't see, I don't see the answer, but there's no question that low levels of sodium can make you feel crappy.
Mm-hmm.
So here's an example, you know, when
cinnamicortin electrolyte,
when people do the marathon, and this is recognized pretty early on, they used to have they'd have these medical tents, and a high percentage of the people who ended up in medical tents were people who ran the marathon and just stopped at all the water stations and scarfed up a lot of water without getting electrolytes. They were sweating, especially on hot days. And the marathon used to be a lot earlier in the season here in New York. I ran it, and I remember it was pretty warm. You know, they did it, you know, much earlier in the year. Now they do it much later in the year when it's cold in November. People would do it. It would be like 80 degrees. So they drink water, 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 water. Well, what happens is you lose your electrolytes, especially sodium, and then you replace it with just water. And you basically are diluting your electrolytes, and you get low sodium. And what is that? How does that make you feel? How does low sodium make you feel? You get rubbery legged, and you feel woozy and tired. And ultimately, you can pass out. You can die. You get brain swelling. You get brain swelling from hyponatremia. It's very dangerous, and the treatment for it is to put an IV into you with saline, with salt, and give it to you, you know, rapid repletion of your sodium. So I could see why those two things might be linked. But then again, there are various medical conditions that cause hyponatremia that have to do with sodium regulation. Some of it is lifestyle. You know, it's like, you know, the gals are walking around with little bottles of water and compulsively swigging on the water in an effort to
overhydrate,
right? That's like polydipsia. There's a word for it in the psychiatric literature of people who drink too much water, like compulsively.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know the answer. I think the answer may lie with typically people deal with electrolyte disturbances are nephrologists, okay? So, you know, have the hyponatremia evaluated by a specialist. And I think that may go some way to explaining the tiredness. But a lot of stuff may be going on. I mean, that's the kind of person that I really would want to get a real detailed history on. I want to look at all their blood tests and all their urine tests and maybe do, you know, some brain imaging, because the pituitary has an impact on this, you know, the kidneys, evaluation of the kidney function, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah. Interesting. So Ken, your friend needs a workup.
Yeah.
Like a total workup. Wow. All right.
I can't do it on the radio.
No, we can't do it. Yeah. No diagnosis on podcasts. All right.
But you know, do plug it into ChatGPT, and you know, you'll get an answer. But you'll get a lot of answers, a lot of possibilities.
Right. Okay. Carol writes, "Dear Dr. Hoppen, my husband was diagnosed several years ago with AFib. He underwent a successful cardioversion procedure, which reset his heart."
Okay, so just to explain, you know, atrial fibrillation, arrhythmia of the heart, What they do is they shock the heart. You know, it's kind of like, you know, when you do, pardon me?
Clear.
Exactly. Clear. Yeah. Stand back. We would do that. You would be clear. You know, just like in cardiac arrest, except with a much lower voltage, you know, you just do enough to set the heart right. Or you can also do cardioversion sometimes with medication. You can give people some medication. You can even do cardioversion as I've done in emergency situations sometimes when I'm no access to a hospital with people, you know, out in the field by carotid massage or by, in one case, I got a person out of atrial fibrillation by pushing his head into a basin of cold water.
Wow.
I was at a lecture, you know, and someone, you know, said that they were in distress. And, you know, first they said, I have a question. I said, well, I'll take questions after the lecture. He said, no, I have a question. Like, I need you to answer now. I think my heart's racing and the heart was, you know, going at 220. And I said, you know, call 911, but come to the bathroom with me. And we filled up a base. It was a winter. So water was really cold right out of the tap. And I said, push your head into that basin of water. He said, really? And I said, yeah, do it. It just he went right back into normal sinus rhythm.
My goodness.
Yep. So, but that's what's called cardioversion. So I'm sorry to digress.
Yeah.
You know,
these are
teachable moments. Story. Don't try this at home, please. You know,
don't try this. Oh my gosh. So Carol says, my husband, since he did this, he hasn't had a repeat episode, but he is on several medications, including Xarelto.
Can I explain?
Yeah.
Okay, Xarelto is a blood thinner. It has recently replaced Coumadin as the blood thinner of choice because it doesn't require, you know, dietary restrictions on vitamin K, and it doesn't require frequent monitoring. With Coumadin, I had to check in for a blood test to check your proton frequently. Said with Xarelto, it's kind of, you know, just take it and, you know, after a couple of checks, you're fine. It thins your blood. But why should you thin your blood? Because in atrial fibrillation, you have a higher propensity to blood clots, especially blood clots that go from one of the chambers of the heart that send an embolus or a thrombus into the brain, causing a stroke.
Yeah.
So my husband takes a number of supplements daily, including curcumin, aged garlic extract, and fish oil. Carol says, my concern is that quite frequently when he works in the garage and accidentally hits the back of his hand, comes out looking like he was just in a fist fight.
Right.
With bloody bruise marks under his skin. I know he needs to continue the blood thinner, the Xarelto, but should he cut back on the amount of fish oil he takes?
Right.
Which is 3 grams a day.
She just mentioned three things that have the potential to thin blood. Fish oil, garlic, and curcumin, okay?
Yeah.
So I think what you would do in this situation, Layla, is you would say to the person, why don't you stop those things temporarily?
Yeah.
And see if it persists. If it persists, it's simply it's the blood thinner that's doing it. And that's the unfortunate consequence of a blood thinner is that you do have a greater propensity to have bruises. I mean, I see sometimes people with very black and blue, the backs of their hands especially, where they might accidentally brush it against something, and normally that wouldn't be a problem, but they're on a blood thinner. So you can see then if those things are exaggerating the blood thinning effects of the blood thinner that is deliberately designed to thin the blood. And if there's no difference, you can go back on them because they have benefits other than blood thinning, you know, the fish oil and the curcumin and the garlic, because they actually work not just to have a bit of a blood thinning effect. They work in a multiplicity of ways to reduce the risk of cardiovascular problems.
Yeah. Yeah. Carol, that's great advice right there.
So what do you think the timing would be? You have this clinical situation frequently in practice. So what would you say, like, give it a week, give it 10 days. How long before that's cooled down?
I would say a minimum of 2 weeks.
Okay.
If the blood is quite thin.
Right.
And just to kind of watch and see, are you still bruising that easily? What's going on?
You know, this is...
Give it a couple of months, Dr. Hopman.
This brings up a story. is when I go diving, there's this phenomenon called barotrauma, which is when you clear, you know, you pinch your nose and you clear your ears because you want to equalize the pressure. Because otherwise, if you go down deep, you know, you can burst your eardrums. So what you have to do is you have to, you know, pinch your nose and kind of burp, pop your ears.
Right? Yeah.
And so, in doing so, I get a little bit of what's called barotrauma, which is a phenomenon that occurs with divers where they get sometimes a bloody nose. And I was coming up, you know, from the water, and fortunately not shark-infested waters because I was like bleeding, you know, from the nose.
Oh, God.
And then the people on the boat would look at me and they'd be all aghast. And I just have to reassure them. I said, look, I get this all the time. Don't worry about it. I'm fine. It doesn't hurt. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not. It looks awful, but it's just a little bit of blood coming out of my nose. So what I have done the past couple of times is I stop taking fish oil for about a week or 10 days before I go diving.
Ah.
And I think it makes a little bit of a difference that, I mean, I still get a bit of a bloody nose, but it's not as persistent and it stops more quickly. It doesn't make it go away.
Yeah. Yeah. But you're stopping your fish oil like 2 weeks before the trip?
About a week or 10 days.
Week or 10 days. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Here we go. So Carol, that's something you could tell your husband about that you should stop taking it altogether. She was just talking about her husband cutting down from the
three. No, but I think it's worth doing an experiment because
maybe stump it all together and see.
Maybe it's just the medication doing that, and it's 100% the medication, and you don't get an add-on effect of those things.
Right, right, right. And you'd find out much sooner if that is the case, Carol, rather than, you know, working down the dose on the supplements and it's still happening. It's taking longer to find out the real cause of it. So that would be the way to go.
Yep.
All right, Carol. Best of health to you and your husband.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, we've got a question from Cell. Don't know if that's male or female. Have listened for decades. I take Kyolic blood pressure. It's less than the 2400 milligram I used to take, but I take the Kyolic recommended blood pressure product. I'm 84 years old. I do everything right. I exercise most days. I do planks. I do wall sits. I do strength training. I do take 12.5 milligrams of hydrochlorothiazide every other day, but my blood pressure is often in the 130s over 80s. What more can I do at 84?
Okay, so file this under health is not entirely a merit system, okay?
Yeah.
Because when you're in your 80s, sometimes blood pressure inexorably creeps up. And almost no matter how virtuous you are. And also there may be circumstances beyond your control, such as your upbringing in a Western society where you might have been exposed to pollutants that had an adverse effect on your arteries. But there is an inexorable change in the collagen in the body, and the arteries stiffen, just as it's sometimes harder to touch your toes when you're 85. So that's why some people do all the right things and they still need to take a little medication just like this person. This is pretty conservative, is to not take a diuretic. That's old-fashioned diuretic, which has very few adverse side effects, except it makes you pee. Depletes a little bit your magnesium and your potassium. That helps to control the blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is what?
The question is, what more can I do to bring down my blood pressure?
What more can you do? Right.
What more can I do? Dr. Hoffman, I'd like to offer something. The guidelines, just like the cholesterol guidelines, that they go down and down and down. The blood pressure guidelines are going down and down. Tell me what you think of what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Well,
hypertension is when you're, when your blood pressure was consistently in the 140s over 90s.
Yeah.
But that guideline has come downward.
Yeah. So this is, you know, a couple of comments. One is that that may be an appropriate blood pressure goal for someone who's older. And I know that this is controversial because they're now actually coming up with evidence that even, you know, borderline blood pressure has adverse effects on the kidney and on the brain and on the heart.
Okay.
That's not rip-roaring high blood pressure. And besides, that's occasional.
Yeah.
I kind of wish that just as we now have CGMs that are accurate for blood sugar, we would have really unobtrusive ambulatory blood pressure monitors. They're trying to do it with things like the Apple Watch, but they haven't really cracked the code on that. But I think that that's something that's going to emerge. And that will actually provide people with reassurance that, for the most part, their blood sugar is well controlled. I didn't say blood sugar, I meant blood pressure.
Blood pressure. Yeah.
So the other problem is that when you aggressively treat seniors, inner octogenarians, nonagenarians, and sometimes septuagenarians, with blood pressure medication to get it to the optimal range, how low can you go?
Yeah.
They feel crappy. They have...
Me too.
They can feel woozy, and they can stumble and fall. And what's worse than a little bit of high blood pressure, borderline high blood pressure, is to fall down, to faint, and break your hip, you know, to get dizzy. And, you know, that's real trouble. That's life-threatening.
That could be the beginning of a downward spiral.
Exactly.
Sure. Yeah.
So... I think maybe there's not such a problem here. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I also want to remind Cell that you want to make sure that you're correctly taking your blood pressure.
That too.
First of all, people take it only on one arm. You should alternate arms. Your arm should be resting on something like a desk or the arm of a chair. Both of your feet need to be flat on the floor. Your bladder should be empty. You should be breathing normally, not talking, not thinking or ruminating, right?
Right.
You should be sitting there quietly, breathing normally for at least a few minutes before taking your blood pressure. So there are correct ways to do it. Also, make sure your blood pressure cuff has been recalibrated from time to time. Bring it to your doctor's office. You know, tell the nurse there about it, and maybe they can help recalibrate it for you, or a surgical supply shop or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Good points. Yeah,
as
that's
well.
True. So, you know, again, I think that we need to individualize our treatment of people with high blood pressure. It's not so much the blood pressure that you have, it's who has the blood pressure.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. Agree. Because much worse things can happen if you're on a blood pressure medication and then your blood pressure drops. And you say, what if you're behind the wheel of the car?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
So that's really something. Cell, thank you for that very thoughtful question. Keep doing your exercising. The planks, the wall sits, all these isometric
types. Isometrics is the best exercise for blood pressure. Yeah. In addition to aerobic and strength.
Yes. Yeah. You know, is it? Absolutely. Okay. So... on to the next question. Do we have time, Dr.
Yeah, we do. We have time for one more.
Okay. Kathy is asking, what are your thoughts on light therapy patches? Do they work?
Okay.
Are they safe?
Yes. This is interesting because I, you know, wasn't sure what was meant by that. So, you know, you actually previewed some of the questions with me beforehand, and I looked up light therapy patches. And what they purport to do is they purport to deliver light therapy to the skin. So according to some of the most recent studies, there's one brand called LifeWave Patches. And what they determined from the study is in a recent study assessing the effectiveness of the LifeWave patches on muscle power and endurance, there were no significant differences found between placebo and the experimental groups completing a 50-repetition leg extension protocol. Okay. So, however, recently I listened to a very comprehensive podcast on the subject of infrared light therapy. Now, that's different. That's with little diodes, okay?
Yeah.
You know, or sometimes with laser. And it's interesting because there's a lot of claims for these things that using, like, you know, there's a sleep mat, you know, that's infrared. You can sleep on it.
Yeah.
There's also different things that you can apply to your scalp if you want your hair to grow, or there are things that you can apply with like a kind of a laser pointer to an injury, say you have carpal tunnel syndrome. And the results on these things vary, and there really is something to it. The problem is that this light generally doesn't penetrate very deeply. So if you know have some like very deep tissue problem, just exposing the surface of your skin to this is not likely to make a big difference to change the cells. Or say you want to improve your blood sugar, because one of the claims for this is that it improves metabolism. That's not that clear from studies. There's not many studies that support that. But there are a lot of studies, and some are not so great, and some are actually a little bit biased because they're undertaken by manufacturers of these devices. So, but there's a couple of instances where they do seem to provide some benefit. So for one, they do appear to be helpful for acne. But devices that seem to work the best for acne are the ones that are in the dermatologist's office. Although there may be comparable devices, and I can't speak to the effectiveness of one or the other device, that mimic the effectiveness of the dermatologist's treatments. There's just something about infrared light that actually can have a significant impact on acne. Another area where the results of studies are somewhat encouraging is in relationship to hair growth. There are actually some studies that show that there can be significant revival of hair growth with these devices. But again, the device that you buy for $149 off of Amazon isn't necessarily going to reflect the results obtained with a device that may cost thousands of dollars that's administered in a dermatologist's office.
Yeah.
Right?
True.
So, if you want to listen to that podcast, it's a Peter Attia podcast. I listen to him because I think, you know, he does a real workmanlike job of evaluating the science on certain issues. And, you know, with the benefit that I can then share that with listeners on Intelligent Medicine. So there's something to this technology, but I just don't think that the patches are the best example of deployment of that principle.
Incredible. So, Cappy, there you go.
Yeah, and I think this actually reminds me. I had a guide in Iceland, and I kind of befriended him because we spent a lot of time together. We toured around Iceland, all around, you know, the route. It's a really beautiful route all the way around Iceland from Reykjavik, going clockwise around Iceland. And it was just a marvelous trip, and spent a lot of time with him. And he was trying to sell me on these things. He just thought that they were like amazing. And oh, by the way, there's kind of a multi-level marketing thing with those things. And so he had a little bit of a, interest in getting me to be interested because I have a lot of influence and I would have got a lot of people, buying the product off of me and being downstream from him. It would have accrued to him because that's multi-level marketing. And I just didn't go for it. I love you, but I gotta say, I draw the line at that. I can't really say that I'm all in on that technology.
Yeah. Okay. A reminder to our listeners, questions@drhoffman.net. That's questions@drhoffman.net. We love to hear from you. We love your question. Next that you want to hear us discuss.
Okay, thanks, Layla, and it's nice getting back together with you again after the holidays, and keep on trucking right up until Christmas and New Year's.
Absolutely.
Questions@drhoffman.net, the place to send questions. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I want to thank you for listening to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or your favorite podcast app, and get new episodes automatically downloaded every weekday. And please give us a rating and review. It truly helps new people discover Intelligent Medicine. The Intelligent Medicine Podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of information on this podcast or materials linked from this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they may have, and should seek the assistance of their healthcare professionals for any such conditions. Finally, please visit drhoffman.com and discover everything Intelligent Medicine has to offer, including frequently updated, unbiased health news and fully vetted product and supplement recommendations.
This is Layla Mudin, registered dietitian nutritionist. I maintain a private practice and see patients regularly. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone and telehealth consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.